Welcome to the Subject Composition and Light Photography Podcast. Show notes, links, and contact details can be found at robnunphoto.com. That's www.robnunphoto.com. SCL is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network, and loads of other great tech podcasts can be found over at www.techpodcast.com. Now on with the show. Everybody, and welcome to SCL, the Subject Composition and Light Photography Podcast. My name's Rob from robnunphoto.com, and this is my little audio diary about my journey through the wonderful world of photography. Well, I hope everybody's been great over the last couple of weeks. The weather is starting to turn here in the UK, turn slightly warmer. We've had some freezing cold conditions, and apologies for anybody who lives anywhere really cold, like in the north of England, Scotland, or any other country really, because down here on the south coast we're a bit of a bunch of softies when it comes to cold weather. But normally by the bank holiday weekend, which is just gone, which is, you know, Easter, we're basking in a bit of sunshine, cutting our lawns, digging our allotments, etc. But it's been really cold, but luckily I have managed to get out on a couple of photo walks. Luckily enough, last time, just after last time we talked, I jumped in the car, went to somewhere called Hillseed Lines, which is kind of on the north bit of Portsmouth. It's somewhere that I drive past every single day on the way to work, and I keep saying, you know, I've got to get up early and go and have a walk round, because it's quite an interesting part of the city. Portsmouth is basically an island that's attached to the mainland via a few bridges. Most of the people in Portsmouth probably don't realise that it's an island, but originally it was, but then it's kind of been joined up. And the big advantage for the military, for the Navy, was being an island, was that you could have a moat going around it that was easily defendable. But the problem always with the naval dockyard at Portsmouth was somebody landing somewhere else on the south coast of the UK, because England or Britain never really had a big army, and then attacking the dockyard from inland. And so there's all these fortifications, and at Hilsey you've got some of these ramparts and some of these fortifications from, I guess, the Victorian era and before that are still there. And then we have to remember, this was the time before artillery would have been able to fire far enough to be able to go over these fortifications and hit ships in the dockyard from a greater distance. And, you know, I've talked about Fort Brockhurst and some of the hills on Portsdown Hill, some of the forts, sorry, on Portsdown Hill. These came a lot later, because obviously as military technology advanced and artillery could fire further and further, the fortifications for the dockyard had to move further and further out, until, you know, in the 1860s, 1870s, when they built these extra forts around Portsmouth. I think once they realised then, when these forts could then be overfired, that really the only sort of defence was to have, you know, an army, a military force that could move around to any invasion threats, rather than have fixed positions. But anyway, so on Hilsey Lines, there's a few interesting things. There's the moat, there's these fortifications, there's some interesting buildings around there as well. It's kind of the start of some of the industrial bits of Portsmouth. So there's an old bus depot there, which I think they're pulling down. They're starting to put up some barriers around it, so I'll have to get in there and take some more photographs. And it was an interesting photo walk. Again, I was pushed for time. I parked in the car park, jumped out of the car, and I'd driven past these areas, but I had a really good line. But I had the 350D and my 18-55 on, and I had my 55-250 ready to go, and just walked around taking shots. There was one of the most interesting parts, actually, was there was a footbridge, a metal footbridge, going across the road, and I found the angles of that particularly interesting, trying to capture people walking across. But, you know, I'm a bit of a wuss off them when it comes to taking pictures of people, and I tend to wait until they're facing the wrong way, facing away from me, before I took the photo. But it was quite good, and I got lots of quite nice photos, I thought. And again, what I find is, if you do go on a photo walk somewhere, you know, challenge yourself at first to actually go and do it. If you think, yeah, that's somewhere I should visit, go and do it and have a go. Take lots and lots of photographs, and again, the most important thing after that is to then edit those photographs down, so that the ones you share are what you consider to be the best ones. And for me, that's just, you know, one of the steps in the editing process, the slimming down of the selection. And then the next part of it is choosing which ones that I put in my slideshow on Flickr that, again, I think are better. So I kind of start off with all of the images, and then I go through on Picasso. You could use Lightroom or whatever software you do, and I star my favourites. And then go through them again, and then take some stars off. Then I edit the starred ones, you know, convert them to black and white, that sort of thing, make them a bit more punchy with a bit of contrast. And then I'll look at them again, full screen mode in slideshows. And then when I'm happy, I'll then tag them and then upload them to Flickr. But that's not my final selection. They kind of stay on Flickr as part of my photo stream. But then what I'll do is I'll then, a few days later, go in and say, right, I like that one, I like that one, I like that one. And then I add them to my to a set I have called Rob's Photo Slideshow, I think. And that's kind of like my running best of. Until at the end of the year, when I review them again, I'll then look at the slideshow, and then I'll pick my favourites from there as well. So it's all about editing down. I probably should do that extra editing process before I upload them to Flickr and only share my very best work. But I quite like sharing, you know, the process of these photographs as they come out, you know, to say that, you know, this is a series of photographs I took at a particular location, and you can choose which ones are your particular favourite ones. I also got the chance to go on another short photo walk where I went to somewhere called North Harbour, which, although I've included it in with the Portsmouth photographs on Flickr, the Portsmouth set, it actually is more, I think it's classed as Cosham, and a little bit further away. And that's another interesting one, because it's another place where I've always said to myself over the last several years, because I drive through this place every day on the way to work, this is a photo I need to do, because it includes the iconic IBM building, which, if you've ever driven along the M27 and gone through Portsmouth, you will have seen on the northern side of the M27. And also, there's a few little industrial units on the A27, and there's this big building, the Paul Building. Let me check, see what the building's actually meant to be called, which is quite an imposing structure. Different companies have bought it over the years, but currently it is owned by, let's have a look, Paul Corporation. That's quite I guess it was probably built in the 70s, and it kind of looks like one of those buildings from, I don't know, I'm sure my age now, but from like Buck Rogers, remember the TV series, or Logan's Run, the film, you know, that sort of, or Battlestar Galactica, those sorts of the original series I'm talking about, or the films from the late 70s, early 80s. That is, they're really interesting buildings, sort of concrete and glass. And so I wanted to do that. And there's also the new Porsche building as well, which is kind of on the A27. And so I parked in the Tesco car park and kind of wandered around and took some photos across there. And it was quite a long photo walk as well. And again, it was another one of those photo walks where I got to a position when I was going around the IBM building, which is actually quite it's bad to say thrilling, isn't it, because I sound a bit sad, but it was because it's private property. Although you're allowed to walk through it, it's a right of way. I was kind of thinking, you know, I'm there wandering along with my 350D with my woolly hat on and my coat on with a camera with a long lens taking a picture of this big building, you know, is a security guard come along and say, what are you doing? And I was going to say, well, I'm taking photographs. But I also, there was a point where I had to decide, do I go back or do I go on? Because I wasn't sure where this path was leading. So I got my Android phone out, brought up Google Maps and had a look at the satellite imagery. And I could see that it led round to the Porsche building. So I carried on round, took a few shots of that. Then walked back along the road, along the A27. And managed to get in a couple of pictures of some daffodils for our spring photo assignment. But that was quite good, quite interesting. Nice little photo, and it was great to get out again with the camera doing one of my favourite things, which is just wandering around a place taking photographs of things that catch my eye. I've also spent a little bit of time down at the allotment, starting to clean that up. Not as bad as I thought it would be after not being down there for a few months. Me and Suzanne are going to be getting down there this week, so we've got some time off. And I'll share a photo in the show notes over on robnarphoto.com for SEL217 of it's a conversion of a 3D panorama. If you've got one of the latest Google phones, like a Nexus or a 4, probably some of the others do it as well, is, you know, you can do a normal panorama where you press the shutter button and you move the camera, it does a nice wide panorama. Well, you can do a 360 degree panorama, just like the images that you get in Google Street View. So you stand there with your camera and you say start, and you literally move the camera around 360 degrees around yourself and 360 degrees up and down, and then it creates this street view like sphere that you can look at, photograph that you can spin around. It's really brilliant, it's really great. I mean, sometimes the stitching isn't very good depending on how you've been holding the camera, and one of the things I'm going to do is get my tripod out and see if you can do them a bit better. But what you can also do, once you've created this thing, you can ask it to turn it into a mini planet. You know those photographs, if you're in the UK, like the British Gas adverts, which are you end up with like this ball of colour in the middle. And that worked out very nicely. Indeed, it was one of those great examples of how the technologies in our phones supersede that we have in our cameras. But of course, the question I asked in the notes next to the photo on Flickr was, you know, is this one of the roads to the dark side? You know, I mean, it's a fascinating photo, and it's a fascinating technical achievement you can do. But sometimes I think these things are there to distract us slightly. They're a bit of fun, but that's what you've got to treat them. You know, but anyway, so that's there as well. Another thing I did this week, which might be of useful to people who are into flashes or strobes, speed lights, is, as you know, over the last several months, year, I've picked up lots of different strobes from the Kabuto Yongnuo ones, and I've got like wireless systems and stuff, and I've been playing around with portraits and flashes. And I've now got light stands and umbrellas as well. You know, the list, you know, carries on. And one of the things I bought fairly quickly as well when I got the flashes was a gel pack. And gels, although it sounds very fancy, all they are is coloured filters, coloured bits of tape. And the idea with them is that you put them over your flashes so you can balance the light, or you can change the light on your flash. For example, the light that comes out of a flash is meant to be daylight balanced, but it can almost be a little bit cold. So the idea is you then have an orangey coloured filter, which is just like a bit of coloured sellotape, a bit of coloured sticky back plastic, if you like, that goes over. They're not sticky at all, they're just like bits of tape. It goes over the flash, and it will warm the flash up, so things like skin tones are better. And they're especially useful in situations where, imagine you're in a room that's got tungsten bulbs, okay? And as you know, if you've ever shot inside a room that's got ordinary bulbs, and your camera's on daylight balance, or even on auto, often everything will appear very orange. And the problem then is, if you then have a flash that you then introduce into the room, that flash is balanced to daylight. So you can have a subject in the room, and you pop the flash on them, and they appear nice, because their daylight balance, and your camera's going, oh, it's a flash, it's daylight balance. But everything else in the room that hasn't been affected by the flash is really, really orange, really too warm. So what do you do about that? You've got different light sources. Well, the answer is to make your flash the same colour as all those tungsten light sources, and then correct on the camera. So you would put like an orange filter over the your flash, so that is the same colour then as the tungsten bulbs, and then you put your camera in tungsten white balance, and then everything balances. So you can do that sort of thing. And one of the kits you can do this is you can buy the Roscoe Strobis gel kit, which is, you know, they talk about it on the Strobis site, and I thought, yeah, brilliant, great, I'll get it. Ordered it, and I think it was something, it's only like £10, if that, and you get loads and loads of these gels. But in the little kit I got, you don't get a way of fixing them onto the flash. I thought, oh, it's a bit strange. And they're not quite long enough to wrap round your flash head and then attach them with like a elastic band or some Velcro or something. There's just not enough length to these little bits of see-through plastic, coloured see-through plastic. So I sat there for an hour while we were watching TV, adding sellotape to the ends of each flash to give them wings so there was enough meat to then put an elastic band around to put them in front of the flash. And also I cut out little white stickers and wrote on what the filters were, because the other thing about the Roscoe flash set, the Strobis flash set, is that you get, I think you must get 50 different filters, and they've all got little white backings behind them telling you what they are. But imagine if you dropped it, you know, and they all got mixed up, or when you're trying to get at these filters, they're very finicky, and you would drop them. So I put them in clear little like mini versions of food bags, zip bags, and with the descriptions on them, you know, what, you know, this is a warming 44 filter or whatever. And so they're to hand. Now, I haven't actually played with them much, but I'm looking forward to doing that. And I finally sorted out my problem of getting these gels onto my flashes. Which, instead of buying, you can buy these quite expensive flash gel holders that push onto the front of your flash, but I think my way is going to be a little bit more, a little better, because it means they fit anything. Today, being Sunday, being the 7th of April, I took a little trip to Fareham, which is just down the road from Gosport, to pick up the new Rankin magazine. Hunger is out, so if you're in the UK, I think it's available in the USA as well, you want to get out and get it. In the UK, it's less than a fiver, I think it's £4.95, and you get this massively thick fashion magazine with lots of stunning photography by Rankin, lots of interesting articles, and even has, to give you an idea of the variation you get in there, there's also like a documentary bit at the back, and there's an interview with Don McCullen, the famous war photographer, and it really is very good. For the money, it can't be beat. There's a few adverts in the front now, but in terms of photos per penny, you can't really knock it. And Rankin is a great photographer. You might not like his personality if you've seen some of his programs, but you can't deny his work is very, very good indeed. And Hunger as a concept, to bring out this magazine that's pushing forward new talent and great photography, is really to be applauded, and I would say get it. But also, I am... excuse me, just taking a quick drink. Because I was in Fareham, I popped my head into TK Maxx, which you'll remember as the... In fact, I've just got to pause the podcast for a second. I just noticed that on my recording software there was something I hadn't muted that was about to start playing. TK Maxx is like this fashion retail outlet, clearance. And they also have a book section, so I went in. And lo and behold, they had some newer books, and I've got this one for a fiver today, which was Kylie Minogue Fashion hardcover, which is done by her and William Baker, who I think is her fashion director. And it's like a compendium of all the fashion work she's done, and for her tours and for her album covers and shoots for her career. And it really is a beautiful book. I mean, if you're a fan of Kylie, I mean, who isn't? it's great in itself, but the book is beautifully presented, fantastic pages, and she's worked with some of the most iconic photographers, fashion photographers of the last 20 years, and so the photos speak for themselves. So again, if you're in the UK and there's a TK Maxx near you, get in there and see what books they've got in their little clearance section, because you might find something that's very useful indeed. And for a fiver, I mean, I've just had a look actually, and it's going for 18 quid on Amazon, so for a fiver, that's pretty good, isn't it? Now, and then what I did after that was, I went on a quick photo walk around Fareham, so I was there, and it was a nice day, and the sun was out, you know, it was one of these nice spring mornings where the sky wasn't really blue, but it was blue enough, there wasn't much haze around, and I got some photos of various buildings, a civic centre in Fareham that the town council, I guess, in the 60s or 70s had built this high-rise office building, which is quite dramatic, and so that was quite cool, but it kind of it got me out again just taking out photographs, and I'm just thankful that over the past couple of weeks I have been able to go out and take plenty of photographs with my camera, because I'm well aware over the last several months, because of the bad weather and me just being busy at work and inherently lazy most of the times, I haven't got out. So apologies if this podcast has been a bit of me just talking about me going out and taking photographs, but hopefully it will inspire you to do the same. One of the other things I've been looking at over the past couple of weeks, well, the past week or so, is I've kind of got into that I need a new camera mode, you know? I don't know whether you get this or not, but every now and again I get this incredible itch to change my camera. I mean, I love my Canon 350D DSLR, but it is incredibly long in the tooth now. Is it 7 megapixels or 8 megapixels? It's not much. It was the second generation of consumer DSLRs. The batteries are starting to lose their ability to recharge. The internal screen, you know, when you look for your viewfinder and at the bottom you have all the settings, what should be like your f-stop and your shutter speed and stuff, they don't come up anymore. It's completely blank, which is a bit of a pain. So I'm kind of getting the idea, you know, it's on its last legs. So I'm kind of getting this itch. And I'm going to write an article about it as well, because what I'm dabbling with, and I still might do it, I'm not sure, I was kind of looking, you know, what can you get for your money? And one of the things that caught my eye, and apologies again, this is going to be about Canon, not Nikon or any other makers, one of the things that caught my eye is the fact that lots of the really good pro and semi-pro cameras of a few years ago are getting pretty cheap. And so I was looking at cameras like the original Canon 5D, which is a full frame camera, 12 megapixels, which goes body only for about £400. So that would be quite interesting to go full frame. The advantage of going full frame is that you get a slightly different look, because the depth of field is slightly different, and you get, the idea is you get better high ISO performance, because the pixels, if you like, are bigger. But generally, these are pro cameras, so they're built better. The other one I was looking at as well was the fully pro 1D Mark II, or the 1D Mark IIN, which is only 8 megapixels, but it's fully weather sealed and it can shoot 8 frames a second. I thought, wow, how amazing is that? And both of these cameras go for about £400 body only. I thought, well, that would be nice, wouldn't it? You know, imagine having a real pro body. But then I was starting to think about it, and think about it, especially with the 1D Mark II. It's a very heavy camera, very big, and even the original 5D is pretty heavy. And then what I started doing was I go to dpreview.com, which you must have come across, where they do these very intricate reviews on cameras. And what I tend to do is just go to the conclusion and read what they say about it, and then look at the conclusion photographs, sample photos. And again, I was starting to think, well, you know, to be honest, the difference in the conditions that I take photographs on and in, the difference between the photos aren't that great. And in fact, on cameralabs.com, there's a really good article where he talks about, and he wrote this several years ago, talks about whether it's worth upgrading from a 350D, my camera, to a Canon 5D as well. And basically in that he says, I can't remember his name, but he says, you know, you'll be surprised at how little difference there is between the two cameras if you're using decent glass as well, because, you know, we all know that it all comes down to the lens you're using. So at the moment I've kind of shied away from them because the image quality isn't that much better. And I think what I've moved towards, because it's a lot cheaper as well, is I reckon I'm probably going to keep my eye out now for a 550D body, because they go for, I think, just under £300. I've seen them second hand from camera shops for under £300 with like a battery and a charger. And the 550D was where Canon went to 18 megapixels. And it's generally accepted, and it's got a HD video. Not that I take much video, but it's got it, hasn't it? And it was generally accepted that 550D is quite a big jump up from the 500. And so and then also with that, it's got the EFS lens mount as well, so I can keep my beloved 18-55. Well, I don't particularly like that lens that much, but the 55-250 is very good indeed, I think, in my opinion. So I think that's what I'll be doing. I mean, if I see a cheap 5D or a 1D Mark II Model N come up on eBay or somewhere like Gumtree, you know, I might pull the trigger, but I haven't got the money at the moment. I have to save up some money for a few months. But I think practically the best option for me would probably be a 550D body. Okay, so that's round about it from me. Bit of a rambler this week. Hope it's been interesting. Hope I've inspired you to go out and take some photographs in that lovely spring weather we're starting to have. Remember, we've still got the March and April assignments going. High key in the spring. If you go to the Flickr photo group, there's some great work being put in over there. Thanks to everybody who's put comments on the blog and taking part in the Flickr photo group, adding their photos to the pool. Thanks to everybody who's gone on iTunes and added a review about the SEL Photo podcast. Really appreciate that. It helps to raise the profile of the podcast and give us more listeners. Thanks to Everyday Jones, who do the intro and outro music. You can find their stuff for free download at everydayjones.com. But most of all, thanks to you for downloading and listening to the podcast. My name's Rob from robnonphoto.com. You can email me at scalesvideo@gmail.com. And hopefully, pretty soon, I'll see you on Flickr.